Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism. Welcome to Understanding Autism. My name is Kim Isaac, and I am an autism specialist. I've been working with people on the autism spectrum for 15 years now, and I'm also a certified RDI program consultant, and I am joined here on this show with my co-host, Paul Loudon.
Hi.
Welcome, Paul. I was going to pull a Dave and say, all the way from Houston, Texas.
And you did.
And I just did it. And you know what's funny? Is I feel like I'm here all the way from Houston, Texas, too. Paul and I were at a conference last week together in Houston all week, so we're still kind of recovering from it.
Yeah.
So anyway, I know. I can't even say long time no see to Paul because I just saw him like practically
Friday.
A minute ago. I know. Anyways, we have a really exciting topic to discuss today.
Yeah, this month we're going to loosely be talking about the ADA, which is the Americans with Disabilities Act. A lot of people out there have probably heard of it before, at least loosely. It's, you know, what's responsible for wheelchair ramps and other things that, you know, you see to help people with certain disabilities acclimate to work environments or educational environments. And a lot of people tend to think of the ADA as just relating to physical disabilities. It is just those wheelchair ramps and the elevators and the other things necessary to help someone who has a physical disability integrate into a workplace or a public accommodation in some way. But the ADA itself is actually for physical and mental disabilities. It covers any recognized disabilities. And the focus of the ADA is about how you can integrate people with these challenges to be constructive in a workplace or to be able to have equal access to, you know, a restaurant or other things. It's not about, you know, special accommodations or anything, but very, very focused on the idea of what the ADA itself refers to as reasonable accommodations. And what that means is that, you know, you don't need to give special consideration to someone with a disability. You just need to make sure that the environment is one in which they can, there aren't special obstructions in their way. You need to remove any unnecessary obstructions. And it also means that reasonable accommodation doesn't have to bankrupt you if you're an employer. It doesn't have to, it has to be reasonable. So if you feel that an accommodation is going to cost more than that employee would bring in, then that might be considered unreasonable. It's sort of a vague thing, and obviously neither Kim nor I is a lawyer. But what I'm trying to do is sort of introduce you to the general idea of the ADA before we really talk into, you know, what it can mean for someone who's on the spectrum. So the idea, again, is reasonable accommodations, and they must not require undue hardship on the employer or educator or accommodator or the person running the public accommodation. So I guess
we've had a long week last week. We're
still
recovering. No, I was just thinking, though. Yeah, I mean, when we talk about accommodations, I think, you know, I'm thinking of some professional experiences that I'd like to share regarding some of the teenagers and adults that I work with on the spectrum. But I also just wanted to clarify, and I think, well, I don't need to clarify. Paul did this really well. But it's just, it's not to be misunderstood with, you know, favoritism and, you know, you know, sort of a looking away from things that a person with a disability may need help with in terms of, you know, being upset about maybe potential mistakes or awkwardness. It's not to be confused with that. So assuming that the people that they've hired who are on the spectrum are, you know, they do have the correct skills for the job and they, you know, they are employable. So another side note is we're going to have a separate show on employability, but assuming that person's employable, accommodations are really meant to help the person thrive in the environment, you know, successfully and be able to use the skills that they have, you know, successfully. So, you know, I'm thinking of a particular young adult that I work with and, you know, some of the troubles that he has relate to the ability to kind of read between the lines, I guess you could say, when it comes to tasks. And this young man, he works in a retail store where he does a lot of, you know, things like stocking and some lifting things, you know, backroom type stuff. And he's really, really good at following a direction or, you know, an instruction like, oh, we need these boxes unloaded. What he has a hard time with in this scenario is realizing that he needs to sort of continuously check for work. So maybe there's some boxes. Okay, so my job is to unload, you know, or unpack the boxes. And he does that, and maybe he walks away, but doesn't go back to check to see, you know, if there were more. He's kind of just waiting, I guess, for the employer to tell him, you know, what to do next. And so this was a big problem for him at work. The boss was feeling frustrated that he had to tell him over and over. And the boss was misunderstanding the student's, you know, actions. The employer was considering him to be lazy and, you know, just, well, basically lazy, which really wasn't the case. I mean, it may have looked like that, you know, and the employer was making that assumption, but really he just didn't realize that he needed to continuously check and not necessarily to wait, you know, for the employer to tell him every single step. And so, you know, we had a meeting with this person and his family and the employer. And we just, what was really helpful too is we just really sorted out what his strengths were and what things were obstacles to him being able to, I guess, perform to the level that he needed to in the workplace. And in this case, coming up with some reminders visually was very helpful. So in the back room, he was able to have some visual reminders posted on the wall, you know, basically reminding him, okay, you know, when I finish my work, I need to check back and, you know, make sure that, you know, see if there's anything more that I need to do. And the employer was actually very comfortable having him do that, which was really nice. I don't know that all employers would be. But in his case, it was a very simple accommodation, having, you know, that visual reminder posted on the wall that helped him to feel, to be successful and to feel like, you know, he was able to take some actions on his own without having to, you know, basically was waiting and getting in trouble and then the boss would have to remind him over and over. So that's sort of a very, I guess, a very simple example, but it was really helpful. And it was really helpful that the employer was open to looking at what this person needed. Now, of course, there's the issue of what the law is, and there's also the issue of people just being really nice. And this particular young man was very fortunate that his employer actually, you know, followed through on both of those things.
Well, and that's the main focus of the law, is not to have conflict. That it's not something where the first step is to start talking legal action, because the ADA on its own isn't about suing. In fact, all you can really get from an ADA suit is the accommodations that you were asking for in the first place, if it's deemed that they are considered reasonable accommodations, and your legal fees back. So it's not something that you want to resort to in the first place, because all it does is cost you a lot of time and effort to get, you know, what you're asking for. And if it's reasonable, hopefully you can get there through reasonable means. Now, as someone on Spectrum, that can be a little hard to communicate what your needs are. And that's why sort of what we're talking about on this first show is ways that employers might look at how to help someone on the spectrum. You know, concrete guidelines as to what needs to be done. Looking at, for example, he kept coming back. Maybe the task, instead of the task being load up these boxes, the task could be phrased as, anytime there are boxes here, they need to be loaded.
Right.
So that the
insight.
Language
yeah.
that you use can also change
right.
the way that someone perceives, you know, tasks. So, and that's, you know, that's what to talk about. The ADA says that a qualified employee cannot be discriminated against, and a qualified employee is someone who can do the task with or without reasonable accommodations. So if they need reasonable accommodations, they're still a qualified employee. And it's focused on identifying the core job requirements, what the person must be able to do the job, and whether you can identify ways for them to be able to do those core things.
Right. So an example, I guess in the example that I gave, an unreasonable accommodation would be that this, you know, this young man needed someone at all times with him or something like that.
Yeah.
Where the employer would have to literally hire someone else to help keep him on task. But yeah, I mean, so, I mean, that's a really good point. And I think that one of the big keys that comes to mind over and over is really about taking the time to get to know the employee. And again, this goes under the category of reasonable. That doesn't mean necessarily become best friends and start spending all your time meeting with this person. But it's really important to understand, you know, who they are and what they need, and maybe even helping them identify a little bit what it is they need, because sometimes it can be really hard in the best of circumstances for a person on the spectrum to identify. But it's also an ongoing process. You know, a person may start off in a job where there's no, you know, conflict or difficulty or anything like that, and something may change that you're not aware of as an employer. It may be something subtle, or maybe something big, and the person on the spectrum maybe, you know, may need accommodations at some point in the job. So another thing is maybe not to assume necessarily if they don't come into it needing accommodations, that doesn't mean they may never, you know, need them. It's just a thought that I had. But actually, let's take a short break. And when we come back, we are going to continue talking about the Americans with Disabilities Act and things that employers can do to support individuals on the spectrum. And we'd love for you to call in if you have questions or comments. Our phone number is 602-296-3632.
And you can text us at 832-278-1441.
And we'll be right back with more Understanding Autism.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Hershberger Assisted Living Home for the Elderly, whether it's a need to recuperate after surgery or just need daily assistance to enrich their life, you can trust that your loved one is being well cared for. Our caregivers are fully licensed by the Arizona Department of Health. An experienced team of professionals provide expert medical care, including physical, occupational, and recreational therapy, wound care, medication management, nutritional support, and personal care. All faiths are welcome. Hershberger Assisted Living Home, founded in 1997, will provide your loved ones a quality of life with loving care. Call Shirley Hershberger today at 602-314-6937. That's 602-314-6937, or visit the website ahomewithshirley.com. Hershberger Assisted Living, home is where the heart is.
And now, one of my favorite attorneys, Joe Collins. You have a great firm, a family atmosphere with great sophistication.
That's my dad's kind of theory when we started. He always kind of touts himself as the old country lawyer. We pride ourselves at having somebody answer the phone. You don't have a computer system answering it. We try to give personal service.
Tell us a little bit about the firm in terms of where you focus your attention.
We probably do 60-70% family law, and we really enjoy it. Family law encompasses such a wide variety of topics. But, you know, for the most part, you feel rewarded that you're helping somebody out. Family law is probably the most rewarding.
Why don't we give your website out?
It's real simple, collinslaw.net. The email's just the same, joecollins@collinslaw.net.
602-788-7227. Call Joe Collins and Collins. Great family law attorneys and more.
Welcome back to Understanding Autism. I am Kim Isaac, and I am here with Paul, my co-host. And just before the break, we were talking about the Americans with Disabilities Act and giving some insights, thoughts, examples for employers on how they can better support their employees with disabilities. I just want to give out our phone number one more time. You can call us with comments and questions at 602-296-3632. And if you, I'll say it one more time just in case you're grabbing a pencil, 602-296-3632.
And you can text us at 832-278-1441.
So, you know, we've been talking about this idea of accommodations, and, you know, Paul and I were talking at the break, too, and it's like, you know, what are some of the things that, you know, our employers might be seeing from individuals on the spectrum who are employed by them? And, you know, some of the things that I've noticed in my experience professionally is things such as the individuals maybe not being aware of the volume of their voice at times. That's something that's come up. Attention shifting, attention difficulties, and not so much, obviously, again, that they're not employable. So keep that in mind, but enough to where maybe, you know, there's just a larger delay in terms of, you know, shifting attention. Also, you know, taking initiative has actually been one that's been difficult and hard to understand sometimes on the part of the employer, because sometimes what might seem obvious to, you know, an employer, somebody on the spectrum really wouldn't be noticing or seeing as central to the situation.
For example, with the stacked boxes, you know, if the employer gave the task as I need you to stock these boxes, that sounds to someone as a once-off task. It may not sound as a repeating task. Mm-hmm. Whereas if the employer had phrased it, whenever there are boxes here, they need to be stocked, and that should be your first priority, then that changes the perception of it. So, you know, while not everyone will have that problem, obviously, the phrasing of what you say and the way in which you describe the task to someone, how concrete you are about what their tasks, can make a large difference in the understanding of which tasks are important, and which tasks need to be repeated, which tasks require initiative, which tasks only need to be done when they're called to your attention, et cetera.
Yeah, and I think communication is really a big thing when we're talking about this. Communication on both sides, actually. You know, an employer, you know, examining his or her own communication and how they're phrasing things and being aware of it, and also really being aware of the employee, you know, and their communication, and, you know, respecting what they need, and also just sort of learning to figure each other out. I think that can be really tricky sometimes in situations, especially when a lot of times somebody might look at a person on the spectrum and see certain things and assume that those things mean one thing, when actually they often actually mean another thing. So it's really important for employers to remember, just because I'm seeing this particular observable behavior doesn't necessarily mean that I need to assume it's something that's, you know, related to something negative, like laziness or disrespect or...
Yeah, to go back to the boxes thing again, is that an employer might easily see an employee that only does jobs when they're told to as someone who's lazy and slacking off and trying to do the minimum amount of work necessary to get by. And that is an assumption that may not always be the case. So for an employer or for a teacher or for similar, any sort of generalized situation, it's very important to be aware that the behavior might not have motivations that are the same as yours, or even motivations that you can recognize. So it's important to, when you run into a conflict, take a step back and take the time to try to ask what's going on here.
Absolutely. I mean, that, again, linking back to that communication piece, is really not assuming and communicating with the employee, which actually reminds me of another thing that has been fairly common for the people that I've worked with, is not showing a lot of emotion in the face. So a lot of times employers will, again, be very confused about why an employee is or isn't showing emotion at certain times or isn't what they would expect to be shown. And, you know, we know people on the spectrum, that is, it's not intentional. They're not showing any kind of negative disrespect if they're not responding a certain way or responding a way that we would necessarily. And so sometimes that can be something that employers really don't understand. So that's another important thing to remember. And really the bottom line of all of these things is, you know, when you get stuck, you know, in your own assumption based on an observation, it's really important to stop and examine and communicate with your employee and determine, you know, what's really going on in order to effectively get along and be successful in the workplace. Paul, do you have anything you want to add?
No, I mean, I think that you pretty much said it how I would have said it there.
Really?
I mean,
oh, my. Can I get some applause, Tom? Applause.
I continually say, you're acting like I never compliment you.
Sorry, I had to. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
You know, important. I think that the first step in anything is clarifying communication, is looking for misunderstandings, because as long as there are any misunderstandings out there, you can't make any good progress.
You know, and I also want to say, you know, and I have some other examples I want to give, but one thing that I found most of the time to be true is these individuals on the spectrum, they really want to work. And a lot of times I think that they're, you know, nonverbal or even verbal behaviors may lead someone to believe that they don't really want to be there. Like maybe they're there because they have to be. And, you know, that's not always the case. So again, I guess that leads into assumptions. But I guess if there are employers listening, some things that I would want, you know, employers to understand is that, first of all, these people are really capable of being very successful in the workplace, regardless of, you know, what the actual work is, and that they actually care about doing well. They may not always know how to communicate what they need or that they even feel that way, but most of the time they really do. So, you know, I guess this is a good lesson actually for anybody, but to remember to assume the good in people and you know, make the assumption, if you're going to make an assumption, usually we say no assumptions, but if we are, assume that they really, you know, have good intentions and that, you know, whatever it is you think you're seeing, you know, there's always more to the story. Another thing that's, you know, fairly common in the workplace is not necessarily knowing how to appropriately interact with other employees. And what I mean by that, a lot of times I'm talking about proximity. Like sometimes a person on the spectrum may stand a little bit too close to another employee and not realize that they are that close, or not always engage in conversation. You know, some workplaces are very friendly and social, and it may not always be the case that everybody you hire, actually, on the spectrum or not, would choose to be that social. And again, not to take that as a sign of, oh, this person doesn't like his coworkers or whatever. That's, again, not necessarily the case with those things. So you look like you're about to say something.
No.
No, he's just thinking. So I do have another example, and this example is in a very different kind of work environment. So the first story I told you, and I'm not going to use any names because I need to protect the privacy of these individuals. But the first example that I gave you, this person, I said, worked in a retail store. And this next example is of an older adult, actually, who was working in an office environment. And this individual is very highly decorated, I guess you can say, in terms of degrees. Very well educated, very, very, very smart, very high IQ, and extremely motivated to make money and to work. And so something that he had difficulty with in the workplace was that if he knew something that he knew was right, that his bosses were contradicting or instructing that they wanted something else to be done, when he knew that was the app, this was better, this was the right thing, and frankly, he was right, he would have great difficulty accepting that from, you know, management. And he had a very hard time self-regulating in terms of remembering, okay, you know, I am intelligent, I have things to offer, but I also need to respect the management. And, you know, if they don't agree with me, that's going to have to be okay. And that was really hard for him. And so there were some times where he'd engage in some arguments that they didn't always escalate, actually, but they started to. But what ended up happening is he was clearly viewed as somebody who was labeled bad things, you know, a jerk or disrespectful or, you know, full of himself or whatever, when really he was just really confused as to why, if he's explaining why this was a better way, why wouldn't they listen to him? And so it was really hard for him to remember that. And he struggled quite a bit with working in the office due to that. And it was very difficult. This is one of those ones where it really hasn't been resolved, to be honest. They're working on resolving it, but it's sort of an ongoing issue that he's working on improving. So actually, which leads me to another point. The person on the spectrum obviously has responsibilities in this. So that doesn't mean the employer is the one doing all these accommodations and the people on the spectrum can just, you know, they don't have any responsibility in it, because they do. They have the responsibility to put forth the best effort that they can, you know, to be good employees. So once they, you know, all parties were made aware that this was clearly an issue, you know, both sides were working on it, which
and
I think is really important.
One thing that can help in a situation kind of like that is that, you know, I might have a project coming up, and my personal thinking about it is generally going to be, I want this to be the best version of this project I could possibly make. But I also know that that will lead to arguments for me. So I've reframed it for myself to, I want this project to meet the expectations of the person I would be working on this project for as best as I can, so that it can be the best version of what that person wants rather than the best version of what I want. And in a job environment, framing an employee's guidelines not as, I need you to be the best at building things as possible, but rather, I need you to build the things that are most like the things I want as possible, so that you phrase it as, your job relates to me rather than your job relates to some static objective thing, that can help someone get the right mental image in.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point, actually. And I remember you told me that how you rephrased that for yourself last week. I thought that was really good. So actually, let's take another short break. When we come back, we're going to continue our discussion. And again, we love callers. Please feel free to call us at 602-296-3632.
Or text us at 832-278-1441.
And we'll be right back with more Understanding Autism.
Your body is the greatest gift that you will ever be given. How well are you taking care of yours? Hey everyone, this is Journey Reeves, owner of Mind Body Unlimited. More important than time or money, your health is the secret to a truly wealthy life. We can customize an exercise and diet program that greatly enhances your quality of life. If you are sick and tired of feeling sick and tired, give us a buzz at 480-370-7768. That's 480-370-7768 to schedule your free, no-obligation consultation today.
Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
At Beerenbaum Baum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
In today's environment, short sales, foreclosures, and bankruptcy seem to be the norm and not the exception. These events can be devastating emotionally as well as financially. But just when you thought it was over, you might start to wonder about the tax consequences of short sales, foreclosures, and bankruptcy. Tax law can be very complex, and it would be critical to understand the tax laws surrounding your situation. Call Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor, at 602-625-3074, 602-625-3074, to discuss your situation. He looks forward to talking with you.
Welcome back to Understanding Autism. I am Kim Isaac, and I am an autism specialist. If you're just now tuning in, I am one of the co-hosts of this show, and I have Paul Loudon here. He is he's another co-host. And actually, I just realized, I don't think you introduced yourself.
No, I didn't really. I'm an adult with Asperger's. I'm 29. I've been diagnosed for 6 years, though I've had it all my life.
Yeah. So anyway, that we today we're talking about, and it's really very, very beneficial to have all this perspective because, you know, when it comes to employment and, you know, thinking about the future for a person on the spectrum, it can be overwhelming. So I'm glad that we're definitely starting to focus on some of these topics. And just before the break, we were talking about, you know, things that employers should think about when they're working.
Well, not just employers, but any provider of an accommodation.
That's true, because actually the ADA includes that.
Yeah, the ADA includes quite a bit. It's sort of generalized to public accommodations and then employers and then a few other things.
Actually, we could probably do a whole show on public accommodations.
Well, that includes stores, restaurants, things like that.
Ooh, I'm loving it.
Well, in fact, the idea that led me to talk about this was a case that may have been a public accommodation. I'm not entirely certain whether or not it would have been covered by the ADA because it was a website. And in the past, the ADA has been applied to, say, making, I believe it was Target.com, accessible to blind users. So the ADA has considered websites public accommodations in the past.
Oh, that's right. Wait a minute. Can you say that again? So Target's website now accommodates...
The blind.
The blind.
Yeah.
Right. That's awesome. There's
software on a computer that you can use to have it read things that you move the mouse over, and there's certain steps need to be made to make a website interact with this software well, and so they had to fix usability difficulties relating to that. And so what got me wanting to talk about the ADA and accommodations was when I was having some difficulty with a website I frequented, and I started looking at whether or not the ADA applied and what sort of things I could reasonably ask for because things were rapidly getting out of hand. And this was a website. It was an online discussion forum, but it was one relating to a piece of software that I'd purchased and was open, so it was public. And I had posted something on the forum that I felt complied with the guidelines and rules that they had posted that they decided had not. And so they gave me a strike that when you receive two strikes, you're unable to access the website for a week. So what I saw is that I had just been punished for something, and I didn't understand why I'd been punished for it. I didn't understand how I had violated those rules. So I was frightened because I didn't know how to avoid violating them in the future. So I went to some of the moderators of this and asked, so what did I do wrong? Because I felt I need to know what I do wrong to avoid doing it in the future. I thought I was obeying the rules you posted. They told me, you broke this rule. And I said, I don't see how that rule applies. They saw that as argumentative. I said, can you explain this rule further? And it went on for a while like this until they decided that I was harassing them because I kept asking for further clarification. And I tried to explain to them a little bit about my disorder and the fact that I was genuinely looking for clarification. They got to the point where they decided I was harassing them and banned me completely so that I could not ask for the questions nor view the website. So then I ended up sending an email to them telling, look, you know, that was when I started looking at whether the ADA applied here because I felt I was seeking reasonable help. I was asking them for help. So then I went and sent an email off telling them, look, the ADA may apply here. We really need to talk this out because I don't want to have to go through this, but I'm feeling so wronged right now. And I was. I spent 2 days without any sleep at all, where I was anxious and upset and on the edge of tears at night trying to figure out what I was going to do about this. So I was in a terrible state, which also made discussing it harder with them because I was, you know, exhausted and anxious and not as clear as I want. But eventually I got in contact with someone, and I explained to him what my situation was, and he was willing to listen long enough that I explained to him, look, I don't understand these rules. You know, if I were to rewrite the rules, what I would say is this, so that that would make it clear that this kind of thing isn't acceptable. And what has happened since then is that there's been a little bit of feedback between him and I where he's changed the rules. I've said, well, it looks like this. This is the punishment that you meted out, which still isn't covered by those rules. Or you've told me that I also can't do this, and that's not yet covered by those rules. Where the rules have gone through several quick revisions where it's clarified the language. And that's one of those things where, you know, to me the importance is if someone violates the spirit of the rules but not the word of the rules, don't punish them. Go to them and say, look, we don't want this kind of behavior, and we recognize that we didn't actually say you can't do this, but we're changing the rules now, and going forward, we need you not to do this, to be proactive about it rather than assigning punishment and expecting the other person to figure out why they've been punished.
Yeah, that's a really powerful example, and a lot of things actually stood out to me about that. But I think, well, one thing is I really want to commend you for, despite being frustrated, you did continue to communicate the best you could and continue to clarify your position instead of maybe necessarily saying the same thing over and over. Am I understanding that
right? I tried to, yes.
Okay. That's really cool. That's exciting. The other thing that I thought of was that how significantly you were affected and how so often, whether it's an employer or just a person out in the world, you know, or a family member, whoever, can so easily not realize that, you know, not being open and willing to communicate with the person that's asking for help can affect them so significantly.
Well, I mean, I genuinely feared trying to use that website again because I didn't understand clearly why I'd gotten that violation. And the rule was one strike, no punishment. Two strikes and you're unable to use the site for a week. Three strikes and you're unable to use the site for a month. Four strikes, you can never use the site again. So I saw that I was a quarter of the way to never using the site again and didn't know how to avoid it.
So let me ask you this, for our listeners. I know you already, I've heard this story before, but I want to hear it again. And I know you all do too. But when, at one point did you disclose you had Asperger's?
Pretty early on.
That's
because
what I
felt like as soon as there was a misunderstanding, I recognized that people might interpret the way I ask questions to be, you know, negative because I'm asking for clarification on something that may seem obvious to them. So I tried to make it clear to them relatively early on that I had Asperger's. And there was definitely one person I interacted with who thought I was using it as an excuse. He thought that I was using it as an opportunity to mistreat him by continually asking very specific questions and harassing him with these questions. He was actually incredibly rude to me even after the whole situation was resolved. He sent me an email saying, you know, so-and-so made the executive decision to resolve this, but I still think your behavior was completely unacceptable.
Wow.
And went on and ranted to me about his behavior and about, you know, about how he felt that if I ever did anything even remotely like that again, he'd come down on me and things like that.
How did you handle that? You don't have to say
I went to the person above and said, yeah. Look, you know, I think...
Did you forward them the
Yeah,
email?
I forwarded them the email. Yeah. I was like, look, I think things aren't as resolved as we'd hoped they were here.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that's really important actually about the ADA. Whether or not the ADA applied here, we resolved it here without having to go to court. And hopefully everyone resolves it without having to go to court because that's the goal of the ADA is to provide these guidelines as things you can do without... going to a lawsuit. But one thing that it does provide is protection against retribution, where the ADA says that you can't be discriminated for these things and you can't be discriminated against for asking for these things so that they can't punish you for wanting
accommodations. Yeah, that's a really, really good point. Yeah, it looks like we have a caller on line one. Phil, are you there?
Yes, Kim. How are you today?
Hi, good. How are you?
Good. Yeah, you guys are having some great discussion here. Listening to Paul, you know, talk about the issues he had with the website reminds me. I work at a fairly large company, and I run a. I, as you know, Kim, I have a son on the spectrum, and I have an autism group at our company. So we have people who are on the spectrum at the company who come to the group. We also have, you know, family members and loved ones who are caring for people on the spectrum. And so I've heard a lot of stories. The kind of thing Paul was just talking about, self-identifying, that you have this this issue, this disability, and how that is interpreted by your employer, how they are willing to work with you, listen to you. Some of the people I have in the group are quite anxious about even self-identifying for the mm-hmm. reason that Paul just brought up. You know, the ADA says you can't discriminate, but they're afraid they're going to be discriminated against.
Right. That's a really good point. I mean, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, that is always something that you're going to ask yourself is, you know, should I tell them? And the question, I guess, is often, is there a point where telling them is better? And I think that it often is, just because once they believe you, then it gives you a starting point, especially if you can go. There's a lot of online resources for that we forgot to write down a lot of these links, but there are things that are like resources for employers who have someone with Asperger's mm-hmm. that talk about the difficulties that person might have and some general ways that you can help someone. And when you have, you know, actual documents there, I sent one of these links to the person that I talked with on the website. And I think that when I sent him that link and he saw that it described the kind of problems I was having, but it was coming from a third party and it described ways to work with it that were very much in line with what I was asking for, he realized that this is a real thing, that this isn't just someone being a problem user and trying to make excuses, but rather that he's asking for help here. And he's showing me that there are other bigger organizations that recognize that these are good ways to give the kind of help he's asking for.
Yeah, and it's fantastic you're able to advocate for yourself so as well as you are.
And we're going to actually, tomorrow's show, we're going to talk about how to help individuals to be self-advocates on whatever level that they're at, actually, and improve their self-advocacy. Because I know, especially with adults on the spectrum, I mean, there are a lot of fortunate young adults that have the support of family who can sort of go in and help advocate. But there's also a lot of adults out there that don't have that, and also that these young adults aren't always going to have that. So it's important on both ends, on the parts of employers to have better education and understanding, and also for the individuals to have the best self-advocacy skills that they can, you know, that they can have.
Yeah, what you hit on there, Kim, I think is a real challenge for employers. Their education, you know, with the number of people that are coming along, you know, being identified on the spectrum, there's so many more that have the potential to enter into the workforce. And like you guys are saying, you know, they've got the skills.
Yes.
And many times. Some of the people that I've met with and I've talked to them about, you know, issues that they've had in the workplace. And many times it's just education, you know, where they're doing something in a meeting with a one-on-one. I remember one gentleman saying, you know, he was cracking his knuckles as a stress relief.
Mm.
And his supervisor saw that as a threatening action.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
But he didn't have the ability to say, no, I'm not, you know.
Right.
That caused, whereas his supervisor prior understood.
Right.
You know, and so... So much of it is the person that you have to that you report to.
Yes.
And how attentive and attuned they are to you. Either one, if you don't self-identify that you have, we'll just call them quirks, you know, and they're okay to roll with them and work with you on them, or you know, if they do, they have the education and the background to help. And I think that's a real challenge for employers now, you know, coming up is. With so many people that, you know, can be entering the workforce, do they know, do they have the education, and will they be willing to work with the people on the spectrum? I know for my son coming up, I hope we find those employers.
Yes. Well, I think that because the population of individuals with autism, I mean, I remember, you know, there's so many new developments and advances in the field over the last 15 years. And all of the kids that I worked with when they were, you know, 2, 3, 4 years old, well, they're growing up. And I think that this is just going to be, you know, the natural progression and reality of the situation. And I can see where employers, it's definitely going to be an adjustment. And just, you know, humans in general, not everybody has a personality that's, you know, a caring personality, people caring to take the, you know, the time to learn or, you know, understand. But I think that your comments really bring up the important point that the person on the spectrum, the employee, really needs to have very strong self-advocacy skills, because that's going to make, you know, a big difference in how things go between themselves and the employer.
Yep, absolutely.
So we so appreciate you calling in. Do you have any other questions or comments?
No, that was it.
Okay.
A lot for hearing me, Kim.
All right. Thanks so much for calling.
Okay. You're welcome.
Okay. All right. Bye. So how exciting. I love callers.
Yeah, we definitely love to have more in the future.
We love it. We love it. Thanks so much, Phil. Really appreciate you calling in, and really good insights and comments, because I know, I mean, this could be a whole other show.
Oh, feel free to share your stories or comments or tips on the Facebook page for anyone else out there relating to this. If you go to facebook.com, Understanding Autism Radio, you can share your own stories or experiences or tips you may have found out if you're someone on the spectrum or someone who's worked with someone on the spectrum in an employment or public accommodation situation.
Yeah, no, we really want to hear things like this, you know, and so many thoughts. I mean, as we're talking about this, so many different thoughts come up for me. I mean, there's so many aspects to all of this. I mean, there's the laws, of course, and Paul and I are not experts on the laws, but we know they're there.
But the whole idea of the law is that you shouldn't need to invoke it. So
right. Well, exactly.
That's why we're focusing on the working it outside, the accommodations right. An employer can work for, and self-advocacy.
Right. And I think that, you know, the more and more we were talking about this, I feel like, yes, not only employers should be aware of these things, aware and understand, there's that side, you know, there are going to be obstacles to that. And some of them are going to have to do with just human things like impatience, you know, or unacceptance and things like that. So there's that side of things. And, you know, again, and then the issue of the self-advocacy, because I think that that's going to be sort of a make it or break it situation sometimes where things can escalate and get rough. And so tomorrow's show, we're going to talk about if, you know, how to help your loved one, or if you're a person on the spectrum, how to self-advocate and how to strengthen those skills and understanding so that you can have the best success you can have in your workplace environment. So any other thoughts, questions, Paul, comments? What do you think?
No, I mean, that's really about it for me
for
now.
Yeah. Well, we do have some announcements, though, that we can move on to, unless you have any
No, I don't have
last
any
things.
Particularly last
okay.
things.
Okay. Tom, any last things? Oh, I put him on the spot. Tom's our producer. We love him. Tom, give yourself some applause. He's so supportive. Thank you. No, I really appreciate Tom. Actually, in this, Tom, you do relate to our discussion today because, you know, you're not our employer necessarily, but you're somebody that Paul and I work with, and you've been so open, understanding, and very, very helpful in helping us produce the show and actually taking the time to listen to us on the show. I love it.
Well, thank you. I've been an employer, or not an employer before, but I've been a supervisor before.
Mm.
And a lot of these things you've been talking about today bring back a lot of memories and some things that, you know, I had no idea of what I was getting into at the time, and you've shed light on, you know, how I can think differently if that situation comes up again in the future.
Oh, well, thanks.
Well, and just to go back to the whole overall point, one thing I haven't said explicitly, but this is definitely something to keep in mind, is the entire point of these accommodations, the entire point of the ADA, is that when you work things out, it's better for everybody. It makes the employment environment run better. It makes the employee better able to do their job. It makes the company more profitable. The whole point is that with reasonable accommodations, it makes everything better. If it makes the environment worse for people, then it's not a reasonable accommodation anymore.
Exactly. No, that's a really good point. And I think it's also just something, I mean, you think about it, the value of communication, and, you know, it's always going to be more efficient and better for everybody if people take, I guess you could say, the high road, the big road, communicate, you know, if everybody took the time to work on themselves and communicate better, things would be a lot better in general. But yes, that very much applies to the topic we're talking about. And we also have a couple of announcements. I will announce that the annual Zoo Walk for Autism is coming up in October. It's October 6th here in Phoenix. And you can actually start registering. I know it seems early. Gosh, I know like the year's going by. But you can. You can register. You can set up a team or you can donate. And you can go to www.zoowalk.org. And all the proceeds for this fundraising walk will go to ASU, their Autism and Asperger's Research Program. And it's an event that I do every year, and I have a team for. And actually, I'm so glad we got this reminder to announce this. I need to set up my team, so I'm going to do that tonight. And so if anyone wants to join my team, check in the morning, and I will be Autism with Excellence, the team for the Zoo Walk. But again, that's October 6th. Mark your calendars. Bright and early at the Phoenix Zoo.
And I've heard that people have been having problems finding our podcast on iTunes. One thing, tip that should make it easier to find us is if you search for Understanding Autism as one word without a space. It seems to come up as the first result under podcasts for that. I'm not sure why it's harder to find other ways. It may be that you guys aren't downloading enough of it and we aren't popular enough yet.
What? Blasphemy. Take it back.
But anyway, so if you're having difficulty finding us, searching for Understanding Autism as a single word, hopefully that'll work for you. Again, I don't use iTunes most of the time, so all I've got is to work on is feedback from other people having problems.
Well, we appreciate the feedback, though, I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah. It's and good. Again, you can also find us at our Facebook page, facebook.com/understandingautismradio, and you can listen to our podcast right there on that page without having to go anywhere else, so that should help you. We're also, like we've mentioned in the past, we're hoping to have a website up and running sometime in the near future. So if you've got any feedback on that, things that you would like to see on our webpage, you know, obviously we're going to have access to our shows, things like that, maybe some blogging, maybe a forum for you guys to have discussions in. But if there's anything specific you'd like to see us do with our webpage, let us know so we can consider it while we're putting it together in the first place.
Yes, please, please. We're very excited about the website. Also, you can also email us. We don't talk about this very often, do we?
No, we don't.
But people can email us.
Understanding ASDs, the letter A, the letter S, the letter D, the letter S, at gmail.com. That'll get to both of us.
Yes, we'll both get that email. And so we just encourage the feedback. We're really here to help you guys. And we're here to explore and discuss topics that are going to be beneficial to everybody, actually, to people on the spectrum and the community in general. So we really appreciate, also want to give the shout out to Breakthrough Thinking and just appreciate the opportunity to have this show and to use it as an opportunity to help others and to have some really great discussions. So, okay, guys, post on our Facebook. We want feedback. Email us. And
we'll be back tomorrow.
We're going to be back
same
tomorrow.
Bat time, same bat channel.
Oh, no, you didn't. You did. All right, tomorrow we're going to be talking about self-advocacy. So if you have, if you know someone, your child, you want to learn how to help them be a self-advocate, or you yourself as an adult on the spectrum, you do not want to miss this show. We will see you tomorrow at 3 p.m. Arizona time. All right, bye-bye.